In re interest of Brandon S. Ms. Stevens, when you're ready. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Peg Stevens. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Carlson Burnett, Nebraska, and I represent the appellant case. Because of the sensitivity for my client of the issues presented in adjudication, I'm not going to be into the allegations of the petition. It is my hope as much as I can in my argument to protect the confidentiality. Suffice it to say, it is our position, Your Honors, that the court here overruling our motion to suppress the statement made by my client by the Omaha Police Department. It is our position that ADB versus North Carolina, which is a U.S. Supreme Court case from 2011, is controlling issue, directly related in fact and in law. Just like in this situation with ADB, the minor child was 13 years old. Just like in this case, the child in JDB was approached by law enforcement in school. My client, Your Honors, was a middle schooler, was 13 years old, and was at school when law enforcement came and asked the principal to remove him from class so that they could see. Now, a 13-year-old whose principal has directed him to leave class and come to the office is going to do exactly what he's told. The JDB case stands for the premise that a minor child's age, informs the analysis of custody custodial interrogation, and a Miranda. I agree with Justice Sotomayor's general provision in her close, which was, we all know by common sense that a 7-year-old is different than a 13-year-old, and a 13-year-old is not an adult. Minor children, when considering the totality of circumstances to their waiver of their Miranda rights, that the age should be considered an objective factor in the analysis, just like other objective factors, length of time of the interview, someone is unable to see or hear or has a different language. And in this case, my child was already in an environment where he was subject to the authorities under whose control he was. So he reported to the office as he was instructed to do, and at that moment was introduced to law enforcement officers, said they were there to talk to him. I'm not sure under what circumstances law enforcement officers would go to school unless they were planning to ask him questions about something done. In fact, is what they said they were there to do. So the presumption at that point is they're questioning him in regard to an allegation, which from the position of a 13-year-old probably to him means he's got to respond respectfully to whatever that law enforcement asks him. That's exactly what my client did. Law enforcement, you will see from the record, according to Officer Spazieri's testimony, asked him if he would volunteer to accompany them to the Omaha Police Department to be interviewed. His response is, can I call him? He was told at that time that they would be called when they got down to the station, which never happened. My client never asked again. He'd been told by the police that for him. Before he was transported down to the Omaha department, he was told that the police talked to him about some statements a little girl had made. It's the only thing he had at that point. One other point before we leave the school is, it is our position, Your Honor, that Detective Spazieri says that when they were talking with Brandon back in the back, not really. And there should, therefore, she would like to say she had no obligation to advisory regarding. And it's our position that NRA CHS in Nebraska says just the opposite.
But there were no statements, incriminating statements made at the school, was there?
No, there were no incriminating statements made at the school. But prior to the time he was asked to leave and during the time he was asked to leave, he was never informed that he didn't have to go with them if he didn't want to, which if we presume how she saw the situation, then there would be no reason for her not letting him go or to not make that statement, especially to a 13-year-old child who really doesn't know what his rights are under the circumstances. Once he was taken into custody and got down to the law enforcement center, the interrogation, he was from the taking of his statement and the video of that, which is interrogated in a room, which by testimony we find out is on the fourth floor of the Ohio Police Department. So that means he walked in and had to go up an elevator before the talking ever got started. And I don't know what 13 voluntarily leave or go anywhere once he's on the fourth floor of the Ohio Police Department. He doesn't want to talk to law. And while he was there, his parents were not notified. You can see in the tape of his interrogation that the law enforcement officer comes in to speak with him, does take some time to get to know him, asks him his age, and she is informed that he's 13, then in middle school, and a decent student. And she begins to talk to him about Miranda rights. Do you know what those are? Yes, kind of. She kind of explains it. And as she runs through the rights, she says, you have the right to remain silent. Do you understand that? Yes. Get a hesitant response. But there is no other dialogue, objective dialogue of any kind upon which a trier of fact could base an opinion as to whether or not a child of that child of 13 actually understood what his right to remain silent was.
But he said he understood it.
He said he understood it. He said he understood it. Or any of his other rights at that point. JDB stands for the premise that that juveniles are recognized as having limits to their ability to knowingly, intelligently, and voluntarily understand a number of things that apply by common law, by your law, and statute. And we have laws about minors under the age of 18 entering into contracts because law has determined that a child under the age of 18 probably doesn't have the discernment, the knowledge, or the intelligence to enter into a contract for business, for purchase, for rent, for anything to the degree that they need to be able to understand and be responsible for what they're agreeing to. It affects of the bargainer. Also, we have statutes that regulate whether or not, to what degree a minor child can or cannot consent to sexual relations, or they are presumed to not have the ability to discern and voluntarily enter into that act. Also, looking at tort negligence and civil negligence, age and discernment of a minor child is taken into considered objective facts. The negligence of a minor child. So JDB stands for the fact that in almost every other area of law, the law recognizes that a minor child does not have the same ability to know and intelligently understand and voluntarily make decisions as a mature adult. And we need to apply an objective standard to the child's age and make it elemental factor when we're doing totality of circumstances to determine whether or not the statement a child is giving to law enforcement knowingly, intelligently, voluntarily made. In regard to the only other issue that's been argued by the parties, which was the state argued that the court's overruling or sustaining of our objection to the relevance foundation of the child alleged victim's therapist testimony. Your Honors, I believe the case that in the record the judge took judicial notice of, which is Crawford v. Washington, is right on point in that an out-of-court statement by a witness violates the defendant's right. An out-of-court statement by a witness who the defendant has not had a right to confront by cross-examination, deposition, or in trial, if that's entered, it violates, it is hearsay. This exception apply, and it is not admissible.
Thank you very much. Counsel for Appley, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Please, the court. My name is Tony Hernandez. I represent Appley, Douglas County State. I represent the state, my attorney's office. The matters before the court is first and foremost whether the court, the trial court, was correct in overruling the motion to suppress. Appellate courts review a trial court's determination as to whether a overruling of a motion to suppress is appropriate or not by determining whether it was clearly erroneous by the trial court to make that ruling. Unfortunately, in this matter, trial court did not make a summary of the facts that he relied upon in his decision in overruling the motion, but the court was provided with a video which clearly demonstrated the manner in which the interrogation taken, the detective's diligence in reviewing the Miranda rights with the minor child, the detective's diligence in explaining further beyond just the script that she had in explaining what the rights were that the child had and that she was asking if he was willing to waive. And the detective went so far to say that you don't have to talk to me or you don't have to talk to me without a lawyer. There really wasn't anything else a detective could have done to ensure that the child knew beyond calling the parent, which is established not required by Nebraska case law.
What about the fact that they told him that they were going to call his parents? They didn't.
There's not a denial there of the child having a right to contact his parents. The child never brought it up again. So the time frame from
he asked all his parents, and they said that they would do that when they arrived at the station, didn't they?
Yes, Your Honor. And
they didn't do that, did they?
No, they didn't.
Is that a problem?
I don't believe so. I believe if he had gotten to the station and said, you said I can call my parents, can I call them now? And they said, no, you can't, then that would be a problem. If we take 30 minutes travel time and getting up and getting the equipment ready and getting the interrogation set up, and they may have forgotten. I don't know. That question wasn't brought up during the trial or during the motion to suppress. So I don't know what the circumstances were and why the child didn't renew his request and why the detective didn't satisfy the request. So I don't believe that is an issue. Because the child was not denied the right to call his parents. He was given access.
Wait,
by saying,
he wants to call his parents, and they say, no, you can't call your parents now. We're going to wait till we get to the station. We'll take care of that.
I don't think they said no.
Well, they said they didn't let him do it.
They said, we'll do that. We'll take, yes. They said, yes, you can call your parents.
But not
when
now.
But when we get to the station. You're correct, sir.
So, in effect, did they deny him the right to call his parents?
I would argue the opposite.
Well, let's hear it.
That they did not deny him the right. They simply delayed it. And then by the time that they got down there, we don't know what the reasoning was why it didn't happen. There wasn't any questions asked to establish that they did, in fact, keep him from calling his parents.
The fact that he's 13 years old as opposed to 19 years old, does that have any impact for us as to how he should have been treated?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I believe the case law in Nebraska clearly establishes that it's a totality of circumstances. The detective went through in her introduction with the child, getting background information on him. He was able to give the judge was able to watch a back and forth conversation with the child. The judge was able to watch his demeanor, his understanding of the questions, his nonverbal cues in answering questions. The judge was able to hear the voice inflections of the child as he was answering his questions. He was able to hear the detective's tone in asking the questions, and based upon the ruling, the judge determined that there was not grounds for, based upon the totality of circumstances, that this 13-year-old who has is a straight-A student that was able to effectively answer the detective's questions, that was able to maintain a conversation with the detective, knowingly, willingly, and intelligently waived his Miranda rights.
On that particular issue, what do you think our standard review is?
Clearly erroneous.
This is a juvenile case, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor. But I still believe that the prior of fact made the decision, and that unless there's a clearly erroneous reason that decision was made, that the decision should be made.
Thank you.
As far as the, so the state would argue that the trial court was correct in overruling this, the defendant's minor child's motion for suppression for reasons that he did knowingly, intelligently, and willingly waive his Miranda rights and continue to answer the questions. The second issue brought up by the appellant was that the state lacked evidence proving beyond a reasonable doubt that the act of first-degree sexual assault did occur. The minor child fully described exactly what he did. The minor child described why he did it. He described the motivation behind it. He described thinking that the thought process that went into it, his observation of a movie that he recollected when the little girl's pants fell down, that prompted him to take the actions that he did. He described situations or incidents that occurred that were corroborated by his witnesses. The witness that testified for him, the minor child Gino, stated that he observed Brandon pulling up the little girl's pants. He didn't observe exactly what happened prior to that. Brandon filled in those blanks, stating that he penetrated the little girl and then pulled up her pants. So once we get past the issue of the motion to suppress, I believe the evidence presented through Brandon's own statement, corroborated by his own witnesses, his mother's testimony that the little girl immediately came upstairs and said, "Brandon touched me," corroborated by the therapist's statements that the child is being treated for her response to being inappropriately touched, that she made disclosures in her therapeutic session, which falls within the medical diagnosis and treatment exception under NRADR, that she was touched by Brandon. All those statements by all of those witnesses corroborate Brandon's own admissions, and so the state would ask that this court uphold the trial court's determination that inappropriate acts occurred and that the child was. In fact, it is true that he subjected the victim to first-degree sexual assault.
Thank you. And was the appellant out of time? Okay. The matter is deemed submitted. Counselor excused. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we are adjourned.